You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
One of the most highlighted aspects of the 2022 budget is the cost of living package, which allows those making less than 70 grand per year to receive $350 over the span of 3 months. The check will not go ahead for those under 18, nor anyone who is already receiving the winter energy payment. I spoke to both the ACT Party and the Greens about their thoughts on the check and the budget as a whole, first having a chat with ACT Party leader and finance spokesperson David Seymour. I first asked him how much he thinks the payment will alleviate the current cost of living crisis.
Well, to the extent of a dollar a day, which is basically what it is, bear in mind that if you earn over $70,000, and that's actually the average worker now that works full-time, then you actually end up with nothing. But the real issue with the cost of living crisis is that the prices keep rising. If you want to solve it, you've got to close the gap between people's incomes and rising prices. Unfortunately, in this budget, Treasury is now forecasting inflation next year will be 5.2%. That means that instead of falling off, we're going to have these rising prices for another year. And part of the reason for that is that the government is extending at such a rate. It's pumping cash into the economy, and that can only lead to more money chasing not enough goods, and that's what you call inflation, too much money chasing after too few goods. So, you know, what they needed to do in ACT's view was reduce spending, reduce demand in the economy to stop prices rising, and then give back some, or at least let people keep more of their own money with tax relief so that they can deal with the prices that have already risen.
Within ACT's own alternative budget, you've mentioned that you would be freezing the minimum wage. How do you expect that this would help alleviate the cost of living, especially if people who are on the minimum wage are trying to keep up with inflation?
Well, bear in mind that the government itself has risen the minimum wage by a dollar or more per year for the last 4 years. What we're saying is we'd have a moratorium on further increases. And if you think about it, the government's not planning to raise it again until next April anyway, so that's a long way off. I think what's important is that we need to make sure that particularly younger people, particularly people with less skills, people trying to get into the labour force, don't get cut out because employers aren't prepared to take a risk on them. The minimum wage has little effect on most people. Those are the people it does affect. Prices are going to rise. There's going to be pressure on wages. They're going to rise anyway. Minimum wage increases tend to be the only effect they really have these days is that they affect younger people and less skilled people having a chance to get into the workforce.
But could the additional cost of living package with the $350, it's not much, but it's enough to hopefully feed some people for at least a little bit an extra meal every week, which things like that can make a difference for students, for people on the lower end of the class spectrum. Is there any way that that can make a difference in ACT's view?
Oh, there's no question that, you know, $350 for a lot of people doing it hard right now would make a difference, and I'm sure it will. However, our policy of sharing revenue from the emissions trading scheme and a carbon tax refund would do the same thing. It would give about $200 per person, not per worker. So, you know, a family of four would get about $800, maybe closer to $1,000, depending on where the ETS comes in each year. So we recognise the need for a cash injection, and we would do the same thing. The difference is that ours is ongoing, and it's actually part of a rational climate policy that gives people buy-in to the ETS because they see it gives them benefits. And if they make lower carbon choices, then they actually, you know, get that basically as free money paid by people who consume more carbon. So, you know, we recognise that there's a need for cash, and we did that in our alternative budget too. But the main thing I'd say is that, you know, the budget has no focus beyond a few months, really. It doesn't really tell you anything about what happens after this calendar year, let alone the rest of the financial period, which goes through till next June, let alone the next decade. What I'm hearing from people is, look, all my friends at uni are talking about leaving because New Zealand's incomes are falling behind. The income gap with Australia's grown by $6,600 in the 4 or 5 years that this government's been in power now. We need to ask ourselves, how do we arrest our decline in living standards and get back to being a truly first world country? Because right now, we are way behind Australia, Canada, Britain, America, countries we used to compare ourselves with. We can't afford the same pharmaceuticals they can, or anything else for that matter. And at the same time, you know, former communist countries that we used to feel sorry for and take orphans from during the Cold War over the last 30 years have actually grown their economies to the point that they're now richer than us. We've got to ask how they're doing it and actually ask how do we become a wealthier country? Because in the long term, we can have this argument, you know, who gets what in the budget, and few dollars here, few dollars there. But we actually need a vision to say why are some countries doing better and how do we become more prosperous?
I do find it kind of interesting how you mentioned that ACT does also believe in cash injections and in assisting people. You said that it was around 800 to 1,000 people and it was ongoing, correct?
Well, it's about $200 per person as a carbon tax refund, and that's for every person in the country.
Right.
So if you take, you know, a family that has two workers, they get under 70,000 if they're not on a benefit or if they're not getting winter energy payment. Remember, there's lots of exceptions to this $350. But assuming they get the $350, then, you know, if there's two workers, they'll get 700 in the family. We're talking about giving $200 per person in the household. So depending on the, obviously it's different depending on your circumstances, but you end up about the same for most people.
I mean, the government definitely has been pushing for electric vehicles within this budget. I believe it was around $562 million, giving people discounts on buying electric vehicles, less of a carbon tax, as you mentioned. Do you think that that was the right move on the government's part?
No, it's not. And the way I would evaluate any climate policy is just so simple. It's how many dollars does it cost to take a ton of carbon out of the atmosphere? Now, if you care about the climate and you want to reduce carbon emissions, then you should want to get as many tons as possible for as little sacrifice of other objectives people have. Right now, in the emissions trading scheme, it's about $76. So somebody will sell you a New Zealand unit, the right to emit a ton of carbon. They'll sell that to you for $76. That means they're prepared to reduce their own emissions by $76. By one ton for $76. Now you compare that to this car refund scheme, whatever they're calling it now, it appears to be based on the Californian scheme, which is Clean Cars for All, and being American they actually use the number four, it's very cute. But what's interesting is California's budget documents show that it cost $920 a ton, that's about 1,500 New Zealand dollars, to reduce carbon emissions by one ton. That's the end of the day wash up for subsidising people to buy more efficient vehicles. It's a very expensive way of reducing carbon emissions. In fact, it's 20 times more expensive than the current market price under the ETS. So ACT says we should stop doing that. What we should do is say, look, here's the cap on New Zealand emissions. It's linked to our trading partners. We have an auction. We set the carbon price through the ETS. And then people are free to make choices. If you think buying a Tesla is going to save you money based on the current carbon price, then, you know, fill your boots. But equally, people will make other choices insulate their houses, work from home, you know, or maybe some people will say, actually, you know, this is important to me. I'm just going to pay the cost. That's the efficient and freedom-based way to reduce emissions. Mm-hmm. What this government's doing is by definition inflationary because they are paying more to reduce a ton of carbon, in some cases 20 times more than the market price.
Moving back to the cost of living package, what does the ACT Party think will alleviate the cost of living crisis in its current state? Which areas would the budget have been used for the ACT Party that would have been more effective for everyday New Zealanders?
Well, the main thing is we've got to kill inflation. You know, the cost of living crisis is driven by rising prices, and rising prices are driven by a combination of shortage of goods. And, you know, we acknowledge, as the government says, that there's all sorts of issues with supply chains. I think the government's restriction on people coming through the border, the friction created by slow immigration, by pre-departure testing, that is actually stopping activity. It's stopping the movement of people, subsidising the movement of goods as it usually does because you've got people on the top of the plane and goods on the bottom. It's also the isolation period, 7 days. I mean, in Singapore, it's 3 days and out with a negative test. That's taking people out of the workforce. All of that is slowing down the production of goods. That's half the problem. The other half of the problem is there's too much cash sloshing around. And when there's lots of cash and no goods, the only way to get back to economic equilibrium is for prices to rise. So there's two ways we can reduce the money supply. Either the government stops deficit spending, which our alternative budget would have done, got us back to surplus this year, not 2025, or the alternative is that the Reserve Bank is going to raise interest rates so that there's less consumer spending and kill inflation that way. Now, if the Reserve Bank is left to kill inflation by putting up mortgage rates so people have less money to spend, A, we get a recession. B, people on mortgages are squeezed. But also, don't forget, people who rent, well, if they think they're insulated from mortgage rate increases, who pays a landlord's mortgage other than the tenant? So government spending leads to higher interest rates, higher mortgages, higher rent. Everything the government is doing right now is inflationary. They've just got to stop this excessive spending.
I mean, the only thing really is just this is incredibly abnormal. The reason basically everything is being done through the lens of the COVID-19 response, and the fact that you mentioned that we would be put into a recession. We've been in a recession for years now, and we are really just truly seeing the brunt of the effects right now. And the government has still put another few hundred million dollars into the COVID-19 response. But do you think that the issue could have been better alleviated if we weren't within the COVID-19 pandemic? Because that's made a massive difference to the way that the government is having to frame their spending at the moment.
Well, there's a lot there. I mean, first of all, not to be pernickety, but we're not in recession. A recession is two consecutive quarters of economic contraction. Because the government has borrowed and printed so much, the economy has actually remained quite buoyant. The problem with that is that they've led to inflation because they've borrowed and printed more money than there is goods produced to match it. So it all goes back to that ratio between money and goods. And I think you're right that we're basically now getting the hangover from that. Is it caused by COVID? Yeah, that is the biggest thing that's happened in the world in the last 2 years, with the arguable exception of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And, of course, that has had a major effect on just about every aspect of economic policy. But, I mean, let me give you this thought. I saw an article this morning that estimated that the government's delay in getting vaccination done meant that we had to have the lockdowns of August, September, October in Auckland, and actually initially around the country. The cost of that adds up to about $7,000 per person in additional debt. If, for example, we'd got vaccinated earlier instead of spending most of 2021 saying it's a good thing we're late, which was the government's line, if the government had taken Ashley Bloomfield's advice in October that it no longer made sense to have MIQ because people with COVID could isolate at home, so why not people that have had a negative test probably don't have COVID? Why do they have to go through MIQ if they can get a spot? If we had done all of those things, then we would be in a much better financial position now, and our COVID performance would be barely any different, if at all, because by the end of last year, basically Delta and then Omicron had destroyed all of our existing defences. We needed to rely on vaccination. That was what we had left. And I don't think we would have got a different outcome if we'd been a lot more open.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.